Welcome to Church Uncharted, a podcast about following Jesus and making new followers of Jesus in the uncharted waters of today. Your host, Matt Schubert, serves at a Lutheran church in the Rockingham-Mandurah region of Western Australia, and he will be joined by guests who will help us, the church, interpret these crazy times that we're living in.
When I'm counselling somebody, it's never just how are they feeling. It's also like, you know, how much exercise are they doing a day? How's their sleep going? Because you know that you can be the crotchiest, most difficult person to get on with if you just haven't had a week's good sleep.
Our hope that as you listen in to the following conversation, you'll be encouraged by the everyday power of the gospel, be given a deeper love for God's church, and be stirred to see the way the Spirit is at work in the lives of those around us.
Hi there everyone, and welcome back to the next episode of Church Uncharted. On this episode today, I'd especially like to welcome my special guest, Gillian Dixon. How are you, Gillian?
I'm well, thank you, Matt. Yeah, thanks for inviting me along.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for joining us. Why don't you share just a little bit about who you are with our audience today, just so that our audience know who it is that they're listening to.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Yeah, my name's Gillian, and I have come to know the Lord in my early 20s, and I've been married to Jeremy for about 33 years. We have four boys and one daughter who are now grown up, and now I'm a grandma as well. I've been studying for some years. I did a Bachelor of Ministry at Perth Bible College, and then I did, and I've been a chaplain for some years there and lecturing. Then I did a Master's of Psychotherapy and Counselling at ECU. And
what is psychotherapy? Because I know what psychology is and maybe even psychiatry, but what is psychotherapy?
Psychotherapy is another form of caring for people that's really engaged with personality structure change. So it's not just counselling in regards to, just skills and cognitive kind of adjustments. It's about deeper understandings of how a person developed, what was going on for them, what kind of person they are now, how they're reacting and responding, and helping them emotionally to, psychologically in all different areas to move forward and to bring change. So it's a really, fun profession. I enjoy it a lot. So I lecture in some of that, and I work at Notre Dame counselling students at the university there, and I'm studying my doctorate.
Wow, that's a fair bit, and I'm assuming that your doctorate is in that same field again.
I'm doing a doctor of counselling, so I've just started that, so I'm in for a bit of a haul there.
Wow, okay, so you've studied both a bit of theology, a bit of ministry, but also really you find your place, your service to the world in the area of counselling and psychotherapy, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I started doing theology and ministry together, which was just a wonderful base. I was working as a chaplain, but I became more intrigued with how people work and why people were getting stuck, and there was a spiritual aspect was definitely, we're spiritual beings, an important aspect, but there were sometimes quite often emotional and developmental things that affected people quite early in life that were still being played out in their relationships and how they live now. And I felt that there was a spiritual, emotional, physical kind of a link there that needed to be examined further. So that got me excited about further study, and so I've kept going in that way. So, yeah, taken me on a slightly further into other areas, but very much still based on a theological understanding of being God's people.
I know that perhaps in some years past, the church, not all the church, but some church circles had a bit of a suspicion towards counsellors, maybe psychologists. Do you think a lot of that has kind of receded in past years?
I'm not sure. I think in some circles it has, and in some circles it hasn't. Certainly psychologists and psychiatrists had a lot of difficult time. My father-in-law is a well-known psychiatrist, and my mother-in-law a psychologist, and there was often a lot of tension between the two, as and you know, people that have problems are just medicated, or that problems are spiritual and they're not psychological. Psychology was seen as a science that was separate to people knowing and relationships. So there was a lot of antagonism between them in some circles, and I would assume that in some circles that remains, but in others it's moved on. Yeah, and I think certainly in psychotherapy there was a big move, you know, a resistance to spirituality and being people being spiritual beings. But about 1990s, that's certainly come back into psychotherapy, and there's been a real understanding of us as being spiritual human beings, and that needing to be part of how somebody goes into some kind of therapeutic setup, that you can't be ignored in our lives.
And perhaps in the same way, from the church's perspective, maybe there's been a bit more of a rising appreciation for the fact that, you know, we're not... Just because we're spiritual beings doesn't mean that we're not physical beings. Really, there might be a growing appreciation of the whole person, but before God.
And I think healthy engagement for, you know, in a therapeutic manner is really important when you consider all those things. So when I'm counselling somebody, it's never just, you know, how are they feeling, what are their emotions, or what's going on for them spiritually. It's also like, you know, how much exercise are they doing a day? How's their sleep going? Because you know that you can be the crotchiest, most difficult person to get on with if you just haven't had, you know, a week's good sleep. You know, as soon as people have their first baby, they often suddenly turn into these absolutely horrific, you know, difficult people to get on with, and marriages can sort of go under stress purely because somebody hasn't had sleep. So, you know, it's all interconnected, and we need to appreciate that and take that into account. So I don't think we can say we're just spiritual people without being emotional, or that our upbringings haven't affected us, or our relational templates that have been set up you know, from when we were growing up with our mums and dads, and how we experienced ourselves and how we experienced others, haven't affected what we're living out of today. So, and often, you know, people come to know God later on in life, like I did, and they bring templates with them. Or people can think that they grew up in a Christian home and this is the right way to think about everybody, but it was just what was happening in their own home. So there's a lot of working through that needs to happen of... But I think when you take the whole person, how God sees us as embodied human beings that are spiritually orientated, then when people want to come into counselling and work on things that are going in their life, it's a much fuller, we understand that fuller dimension, and healing and transformation is far deeper and profound.
Yeah, and perhaps another area where there's a little bit of confusion perhaps is around this topic of self-care, which I know that you... speak into a lot, Gillian. You lecture in this area as well, and this is probably an area where from the Christian perspective there might be a bit of misunderstanding, because the secular world has perhaps a different view on that. Explains what is self-care and how should Christians think about self-care, Gillian?
Well, that's the thing is, I think Christians really struggle with self-care, and for people like myself who are going out to work in professions in the world, and you hear a lot about self-care, you're going, hang on a minute, how am I meant to live this out? Self-care is essential, and a lot of us can only have accreditation and registration in particular groups if we are actually engaging in self-care, and it's really critical. And then as Christians, we kind of go, oh, you know, we're not so into that. We struggle with that. And I suppose the thing is, because as believers, there's a lot on self-sacrifice. We've got to give up things of ourselves. We've got to suffer for the gospel. We are selfless in relationship with others. We have persecution and difficulties, and we just keep going on. And we're meant to just keep doing that. So we see anything that's got to do with self as an emphasis on our self and not on God. It's a change of focus, and it's a selfish and it's self-indulgent. So self-care is often by Christians put in that, oh, we don't want to do that. Also, self-care is also put in balance. People talk about self-care and balance in life. You've got to, you know, have a balanced life. And I'm not sure that the scriptures lead us to understand life is to be balanced. Mm. So for believers, when we talk about self-care, it becomes quite a you know, the water gets murky pretty quickly. So we kind of have to unpack it a little bit more.
Yeah, that's right, because self-care sounds a lot like self-improvement, and in a culture of ambition that we're in, like it's and individualism, I think perhaps the discerning Christian tries to process self-care and go, oh, well, actually, this just sounds a whole lot like the self-actualization movement, which has sold millions of dollars of books and all that. So if it's not a pursuit of self-improvement and the gospel of self, then what is self-care from a Christian perspective, Gillian?
Well, I think what's come up for us through the world in has seen very carefully is burnout, and we've seen the world wars were quite helpful in a negative way, really, to see the effect of stress and what that does to a human being. There was people came back from the war really in a mess, and people were called shell shock, and they had been traumatized and didn't know how to deal with things, and people didn't really know how to engage. Let's just not talk about that and move on. And in fact, a lot of European countries were really strongly, let's not just talk about what's gone on, let's just keep moving forward. And even, things often go through three generations. Grandparents really affect parents, affect children. So you see that three generations, you see quite strong, let's just not talk and keep going. Well, for Christians, this is quite strong. We just put aside our own things and we just keep moving forward. But people get burnt out. And particularly at Bible College, when we're training people for ministry and for being chaplains, and you can see a lot of really shocking and difficult things. Yeah, we're not in war seeing people blown up, but we are seeing really horrific things that people do to each other in non-war situations. And they are graphic, disturbing, dysfunctional, and horrific to us. How are we going to deal with this, and what are we going to do with this? How are we going to care for ourselves so that we don't get a secondary trauma or stressed ourselves? And when we're looking at being selfless, pastors are going to think, well, they're going to work, be available to the church 24/7, 7 days a week. If we take time off to be with our families, we can feel guilty about that. And missionaries often used to leave their children at home and in boarding schools while parents went off to other countries. And children, were from the age of five. I have quite a few friends actually who were slightly older than me who were in five at boarding school while their parents were in different countries, taking the gospel out so people can feel neglected and their parents are unavailable. So there's been a lot of working through that. I think we can glean the insights and understandings from now and work that into the picture that we understand. So when we're training people to go into ministry, it's really important to think, how are you going to do this? So that's why there is that particular course at Bible College, and we want to look at it. Mm. So I suppose we want to get away from it being we're going to look at ourselves overly. We tend to find people do look at yourself a bit more positively or a bit more negatively. People can have, or sometimes both at the same time can coexist quite easily. People can be quite self-focused and do stuff and then feel quite guilty and bad about themselves afterwards. So helping people to understand what is God actually saying to us about living as his people and taking care of ourselves is an important thing to learn.
Yeah, you speak about self-care in terms of stewardship, how one uses their resources well. And I think particularly in a book I love by John Mark Comer, he talks about the way that hurry and love are incompatible. Yes. That you actually need to order your life in such a way that you are able to love and be of service to those around you. Is that fair enough to say to the whole kind of Christian self-care idea?
Yeah, I love the way you use hurry with love. Yeah, you can't love somebody else in a hurry. And I think you can't even take care of yourself in a hurry either. I think when you're rushing from one thing to another, you've never really worked out what you've just come from or what you're just going to. So often when I'm supervising chaplains or area chaplains and people in different forms of ministry and they're on the road or they're running from doing different things, I'm often saying to them, you know, you can't hurry this. You can't just go, right, I'm out of this meeting and now I'm into the next. You need time to prepare for going into something. You need to actually, you know, how am I going to connect with somebody today? What will I be wanting to take? Lord, what would you want me to bring? How can I encourage them? How can I stand with them? And then going and actually being there and being present with them fully, not having your head still in another meeting or yesterday's stuff that you haven't kind of processed. So you can actually be with them and be present and show them respect and integrity by giving them 100% focus and being prepared to serve them well. Then when you leave, you're going to need time to reflect on them, to think about them and to think about things that might be important for next time you see them or areas maybe that you didn't serve them well or, on reflection, what could I have done better? What maybe actually they were saying they needed some kind of they actually needed a night off, so I'll drop them around some dinner. But if you're just in a hurry moving from one thing to another, you can't. And I think we learn this as therapists is, careful preparation for when a client comes in, then being with a client, and then when they leave, the note-taking procedure afterwards is really part of the processing how you cared for them and how you will care for them again.
So are you saying that perhaps not only would it be helpful for mental health practitioners to have that kind of process, but really for just the everyday person to just create that extra little bit of margin between their appointments, but between their actions that they need to do throughout the day, just that extra little bit of margin to allow for time of reflection, assessment?
Yeah, because we go 4:30 meeting, 5:30 meeting, and no space in between. I really like the drive home by the ocean, it takes me 25 minutes to get from work to home, and I drive by the ocean, and I can really kind of be ready for coming home and being present with the people that I'm going to be with, as well as have finished the things that I was sort of a bit stroppy about that might have happened at work or something that I'm really thinking about, I'm troubled about something or I'm really happy that this nailed this thing, this happened and it was great, you know. But then you're preparing to come home. So I think, dads at work coming home from work, mums, going to pick their kids up from school, dads taking their kids to school in the morning, how are we spending time and walking along the road? And I think that's quite scriptural in that being together and talking together and processing together, taking time.
Sure. And at the moment, we're in a time where, well, some people's routines haven't changed greatly, but a lot of people have had their routines change quite a fair bit. I don't need to explain to you as a mental health practitioner the kind of toll that this current epidemic, the social distancing, the toll that has taken on people's mental health. How can Christians in particular think through some healthy practices, some healthy habits that they can employ in their day-to-day life, particularly during this COVID-19 season?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Matt, because like you say, it's people's lives have really changed. Some people have got more and more busy, and some people have suddenly found they're without a job and they're stuck in, a one-bedroom apartment. It's a very interesting time because we're not all having the same journey. Some people go home to a apartment with no garden to be on their own. Other people, come home to a big family and lots going on and they can run around out the back with the dog. So it's quite different for different people. I suppose I think when we think about self-care, I think taking care of yourself is very important. In regard to how do we understand that, being good stewards of ourselves and our time and our resources. How are we going to look after ourselves? But then how are we, because we're a community, God's made us not to just be on our own but to be with others. How are we going to care for others? So, and what we can see, what science has actually showed us, is that everything that God told us in the scriptures is really true. So I really enjoy the connection between science and scripture, because I see, you know, it just backs up all the things that God's told us. And, you know, we've been reading about for however long we've been believers, and generation passes from one generation to another. When we get the science, God, that's why we're doing that. But, I would be really encouraging people to be mindful of themselves, of what they're going through, and that it is difficult, and that there is a high culture of anxiety around at the moment. I would really ask people to, you know, think about how much time they are watching the news. I love it. I'm a real, whether it's COVID-19 or it's something else, I like to know all the politics and what's going on, and I love to watch the news channel. But then, you know, the rest of my family hate it. They don't like to know what's going on in other countries. So with COVID-19, you kind of got to watch, well, am I sitting here watching doom and gloom in another country, and I've got my teenage daughter sitting next to me? It's not going to be helpful for her. So, you know, monitoring how much you're involved in particular things and getting input from places that are just anxiety producing. I think this is an actual, you know, time that people can start practicing spiritual disciplines, and I'd really encourage you, Matt, to do a day on spiritual disciplines, and people can get really, you know, if you've got time on your hands, you can really engage in that. But for those of us who are really flat out as well, I think, or if you're doing nothing, there are some general things that I think people could be doing. There's a really good mental health program out called BASE, like face but with a B in front of it, BASE, and they call it Getting Back to Basics. And I love it because a BASE is like a little acronym for body, care, achievement, connecting and enjoyment. And each of those four things produce four different chemicals that we call the happy chemicals in our brains. So body care, you know, is exercise, which releases endorphins, achievement, which releases dopamine, connecting with people releases oxytocin, and physical activity releases serotonin. So those are kind of the things that God's put in us, that when we really connect with other people and we do specific things, we can feel good about life in general. But they're the physiological things. I think one of the other things I'd like to add to that is gratitude. And I really talk about that in self-care in our classes, and also for Christian discipleship. God really calls us to live in a posture of humility, and I think that promotes gratefulness. So I really encourage people, because also the science backs up, funnily enough, they've done a whole lot of neuro research where they have wired people's brains up, and they've seen when you practice gratefulness, so at the end of the day, think through the day and think, what's happened that's been really good? Gee, I'm really grateful, you know, for that dessert my daughter decided to make for us in her COVID-19 baking stage. You know, I'm really thankful for the people that I do have. I'm really thankful that my friend Zoom talked to me today and we sat there and had a coffee and chatted. And I'm really thankful for the way we live in Perth and, you know, the sunshine that's been coming through today. Those things actually produce a whole lot of different cognitive pathways in our brain and actually change the way we view life. Also guarantee that you get a really good night's sleep. And they connect you to God. It keeps that posture of humility. This is what God has. We can be thankful to God for our lives before him. So this is, you know, the science backs up how God has called us to live as his created beings before an awesome creator God. And then the science goes, yeah, well, this actually really works. So I would suggest that people do some of those things, like care for your body, like how much sleep are you getting a night? Is it regular? What are your eating habits like? Yeah, you know, we're all baking croissants and desserts and all kinds of, and muffins and all kinds of things, but we're probably putting on, in America they call it the COVID 15. They expect people to put on 15 pounds, which... Oh. About seven kilos from not doing anything. So, you know, like, how are you going, instead of COVID-19, they're going COVID-15. So how are you not going to put weight on? But so exercise, sleep, eating, taking care of your body, achievement. What can you do where you've done something that's really good, you know, that you've can feel good about yourself? You know, like I went and actually cleaned the bathroom and now my bathroom looks great. Or I finished my assignment for study. That was wonderful. Or I've pulled all the weeds out of the garden, you know. So I walked down, I was telling you earlier, Matt, I walked down my street and the gardens are looking fantastic because people have had time. But also connecting with people, you know. Can you Zoom a friend? Can you Zoom a group of friends? Can you have Friday night drinks with groups of friends? Can you have coffees with people? Like, what can you do? And that's connecting even with your pets. So stay in touch with people. Like, really open yourself up to God and say, who can I connect with today? Who would I can do a quick check-in with and show a bit of that love to, you know?
Yeah, I love that, Jillian. And I think it's funny that you say that because just before we jumped on the podcast, Becca and I were just out the front gardening, taking advantage of the time at the moment. But, you know, you're right. It's not just me. A lot of our neighbours are out and about gardening as well. And not just gardening, but I swear, like, in our suburb that we're in, there are normally way too many parks per houses. It's like they thought it would be a great idea to build parks on every corner, but normally they're so empty. But at the moment, it seems just more people are out kicking the soccer ball, going for walks around the park. I saw just the other day, three dads and their kids were down at the park. I know that Becca and I, we're just really enjoying walking around and just actually seeing who lives around us.
Yeah.
Normally it's a ghost town during the day while people head up to Perth for work or whatnot, but we're actually really enjoying being a little bit more localized to our setting. And really, I hope, Jillian, that doesn't go away too quickly.
Yeah, I think there's things like we can learn from this that are brilliant. That would be really sad if we all came out of home isolation and hadn't learned anything about it and what was really important to us. And, yeah, I think the locality, being around and getting to know your neighbours and, you know, as you're walking down the street, saying hi to everyone who seem to be sort of lurking out the front, you know, in their gardens, doing a bit of weeding, but really they just want to say hi to people that walk by. So, yeah, how can we connect with our neighbours? How can we, you know, take the kids next door down the park and throw a frisbee? How can we have a bit of fun together? So, yeah, I'm hoping that those kind of things that we've learned will stay with us, Matt.
Hmm. Yeah, I know that for me it was a little bit strange a week ago today when our WA premier, and I know that a couple other Australian states, they're on a similar kind of trajectory as us. They're in a similar situation. But our WA premier, he announced that now groups of up to 10 people are allowed to be gathering together. And I remember that came off the back of, I don't know, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks, where rules hadn't really changed. And when I heard that things had changed again, it was the strangest feeling, Jillian, because I was almost disappointed. I was almost disappointed that we could gather in groups of 10 again. And not because I don't love my friends. I do. Some of them are hopefully listening to this if they love me. But I know that I think maybe I felt I had just gotten used to the current rules. I'd gotten used to a new normal, and I think part of me didn't really want to change it all again, change my thinking. And I wonder if there's a bit of change exhaustion around, or it could just be me. I don't know.
It could be, Matt, because, you know, you're still honeymooning with your lovely new wife, and I think being in home lockdown probably suited you and Beth. You know, you get familiar with the, you know, we've got a one change and it was a big change and now we've become familiar with it. Now we've got to change again. And what will the change mean? There's still uncertainty about that. And nobody can guarantee you know, that there won't be flare-ups and lockdowns and all that continuing. So it still isn't, nothing's still quite sure. So, yeah, I think, you know, most of us do like things to be stable for periods of time. So when there's massive change and changing so many different aspects of life, it's hard to be flexible. And especially when some of the changes have been negative, people have lost jobs and, you know, or they're stuck in homes that they don't really want to be with people and perhaps they don't really want to be. It's one thing to be stuck in a home with your lovely wife. It's another to be stuck in a home with a couple of singles that you don't really get on with well, or with a family that's abusive and dangerous. So it really does depend on your situation. So, yeah, it's interesting that we have to go to change again. And what will that change mean? We don't know. And then this change will be transitional to another change as well. So what will that next one be? You know, we're all feeling a little bit like we'd like a little bit more structure and control for a little bit longer. But then, you know, as far as self-care goes, I really encourage people just to structure and control what you can. So, you know, what you do enjoy doing and how you do like it to be, go for that, you know.
Yeah, there's certainly a number of positives that we can take out of this strange season, which, you know, we need to admit there's a lot of negatives there too, but perhaps some of my strange, confusing feelings around it is coming from a place where, you know, I'm trying to help our church net navigate this as well, and perhaps a number of church leaders and leaders maybe of other organisations are feeling this as well as they try and work out how to serve their people best with the different changes that are coming about. One of the things that I'm enjoying right now about church, Gillian, is that a lot of it feels a lot more simplified. A lot of it seems a lot more stripped back, and that there's less programs that we need to jump to from day to day, week to week. And I'm enjoying, I don't know, maybe the more simple approach that us as Christians need to take on. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we can't do, and maybe that's helping us assess what it is that we can do. Do you have any thoughts on that, Gillian?
Yeah, I love the way you say that, Matt. It's, you know, a lot of things we can't do, but what can we do? And I think, you know, that's a very positive way of looking at things and working. And if we believe God's, you know, with us in all kinds of situations, you know, it's not one door shut is just another one really opening up. I think for the church, one of the things we really talk about in the Christian Discipleship Unit is how we can really, churches can encourage people to be consumer Christians. We come into programs that a lot of people who work at church have worked very hard to get the service up and going and the music going professionally and fantastic, and everything, you know, runs like clockwork and like a dream because we've got all streamlined and people can just come in, everything moves through, they're in the door, know how everything goes in, they're out the door, home again and back to normal life, and church has been done. So, and then, you know, if we're going to have a group, we go into this one group and then another group and then another group, you know, like we were talking
that's
earlier.
That's right. For each stage of the Christian journey, you have your hour for the new, new start and then...
Yeah. You can do all that. You can move through the groups and then in your cell group and then, you know, that's how it goes. But I think this kind of really forces us to come back to basics and to go, like you're saying, it's simplistic. We're stripped back. What is my faith like when I don't have other people compelling me to do things or I'm not in a church structure? So it moves us from a consumer Christianity to being an active participant in the kingdom of God ourselves. Like, how am I going to maintain my faith life and care for myself spiritually as well as all these other areas? So will I be reading my scriptures daily? Will I be speaking to God? Is my speaking to God and my prayer life just about my shopping list of worries and concerns? Or am I actually putting time aside to hear from God and expecting him to speak into my life and talk to me? Can I listen to him and then be directed by him in obedience and go, well, I'm going to call on Auntie Nell and see how she's doing on her own? And, you know, what ways can I engage with my group, my prayer group? How can we pray for each other on Zoom now? And I actually have to initiate that and be active in that. And I think that's beautiful because we're all learning that relationships matter. And if we're not going to do it, we can fall off off the edge of it. I hope we don't slip back into being consumer Christians again. I hope we stay, really listening to God and going, well, how can we be your people and glorify you and be part of your active kingdom right here on earth now in this time?
That's great, Gillian. I like something that you said before, just encouraging everyday Christians to initiate. Seems to be a bit of a running theme for these podcasts over the few weeks. It seems like this is a season where it is the everyday regular Christians, in inverted commas, who are being called to action right now. And I would love to see that the church take this on, to see Christians rise up. And this has been a hugely encouraging conversation. Thank you, Gillian, for joining me on the Church Uncharted podcast. Thanks.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Thank you for listening to Church Uncharted. If you've found this conversation between Matt and Gillian helpful or thought-provoking, why don't you share this episode? Maybe with someone interested in mental and emotional well-being, or with someone who might appreciate the reminder to slow down and give themselves margin during this strange season. That way they too can be encouraged by the everyday power of the gospel, be given a deeper love for God's church, and be stirred to see the way the Spirit is at work in the lives of those around us.